A Hoax in the Sky. I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
Type of bomb on board was an altitude control bomb, and we did not know what altitude it was set to go off at.
Qantas had paid $500,000 ransom to guarantee the safety of the 116 passengers after a telephone caller had convinced officials that an altitude bomb had been placed aboard.
If you know me and you don't, I love a good hoax. Love it.
Hoax and Horton.
I love it. When a word ends with the letter X, I'm like, this is good.
Hijinks. And hoax.
I love hoaxes.
Tex-Mex.
And I think what has brought that on is I just love them. I love, you know, obviously pyramid schemes, scams, fraud-based things. And I've been listening to my current favorite podcast, and probably one of my favorite podcasts, is Swindled. It's excellent. It's
free plug for Swindled.
Free. They don't need it. They don't. But I'm, when I run out of episodes, I'm going to be very, very upset.
Yeah.
It's just, it's great.
You're like a ticking time bomb.
It just covers a lot of swindles. You know, there's crime involved, but it's not, it usually doesn't end as macabre as some of the things. But if you're into any kinds of fraud, scams, white collar crime, and, you know, sometimes it gets, you know, a little dirty, but it got me really interested in hoaxes. And this is one hoax that I've always been
hoaxified?
Kind of, yeah, I was kind of familiar with it, just in general research, but I never really got down and dirty with it.
You did. It's like, whoa, where are we now?
Yeah, but it is the Qantas bomb hoax of 1971.
Ooh-wee.
Because it is a hoax. So, you know, bombs and airplanes in 1971 were bad, but worse after, you know, 9/11. Yeah. But the fact that it's a hoax, and it takes place in Australia, and for some reason Australia, we listen to Teacher's Pet, right?
Australia is unhinged.
Oh, there's the level of, like, kind of crime, and I love Australia. Like, we'd love to go there.
Please, absolutely.
Somebody send
us there.
My
brother lives there.
Oh, yeah. Does he like it?
Yeah, he loves
it. I thought he lived in China.
He did live in China. He moved to Australia. He's in Adelaide.
Okay.
I'm gonna go visit.
It's not like, oh, he lived in Valley Village, and then he moved to Burbank.
No,
he's not. Okay.
No. We love Australia. We have loved ones in Australia. It's just the culture there is so, it's like sliding doors, England. You know, it's like, it's very like bizarro Europe.
Yeah.
Deadly animals.
Yeah. I feel like there's just like the crime and true crime aspect in Australia is rife.
Oh,
I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess Australia was a debtor's prison at one time.
Yes, right? It was.
It's interesting, but this is not meant to be disparaging.
No.
It's a celebration. We'd love
it's
to go.
A celebration. The Qantas bomb hoax is a celebration of your culture.
Well, I mean, the thing is when people pull off like a scam, especially if nobody, obviously a victimless crime, but if nobody gets hurt and it's just like monetary damage or time consumption, I feel like credit should be given to the people that pull them off, especially over a long period of time.
Yeah.
That's in a general thing. I feel like there should be some credit given where maybe you could like turn around and be like, hey, let me lend my knowledge.
Sure.
You know, like a hacker that gets caught and then says, hey, listen, intern, I'll lend my knowledge to how to, you know, safeguard your internet better.
Yeah.
I feel like some credit should be given. But I guess I'll give some credit to Mr. Brown.
Mm.
Oh.
What?
You want to know about Mr. Brown?
Yeah.
Okay.
He sounds ominous.
Single.
Does he have a first name and a...
Listen, you're sounding just like a Fed.
Oh,
you sound
no!
just like a Fed.
Dark alert. Yes. I'm cool. I smoke.
Let me just kind of lay it out. At 11 a.m., May 26th, 1971, a man calling himself Mr. Brown, called the Department of Civil Aviation. Which is, I guess, I don't know if that's that's what it's called in everywhere, or I'm not familiar with aviation.
I lost my brother about it.
Yeah, but, there might be.
Yeah, in fact, I would love him to weigh in on this because he taught a class about hoaxes and crashes and all kinds of...
Yeah. I'm not talking conspiracy theories.
No, but like aviation like craziness, essentially.
Oh,
that was,
I like that.
Class is called that.
He's not going to say the earth is flat, is he?
He's a flat earther. He's my brother and I love him. He has some good ideas.
Yeah. So it was transferred to a police officer, and he said there was a bomb in Locker 84 at Sydney's Kingsford Smith International Airport.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, there's a bomb.
He's like, here's some info, Department of Civil Aviation.
Was supposed to be a 24-stick gelignite barometric bomb, which sounds...
Oh my God, I love those bombs.
Terrifying. Yeah. It sounds terrifying.
It does. It sounds like it's made of a neon color. Yeah. Like it glows in the locker.
Yeah. It's
like a Ghostbuster style.
Yeah, it's 24. Listen, one stick and I'm nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
You got 24 sticks?
Whoa, stop it. Stop no, it. Thank stop you. It. Mm-mm.
Also, there is an identical bomb
on board. Cool, a twin?
Boeing 707, Qantas jet. It was flight 755, mm-hmm. London to Hong Kong. So
double whammy.
Big, classic. Big international.
Classic. We got one domestic. We got one abroad, baby.
So they go and check. Mm-hmm. They're like, let's see what's going on. Bomb spot. And they found it. There was a bomb.
Oh, okay.
It was not activated.
Okay.
But obviously it was a real bomb. They were like, somebody made this, was like, knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, it's not like a prank. Mm-mm. It's like they showed up and there was a bag of dog poop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, they're not here. And it was like, sorry, Gwyneth Paltrow's head.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Is that your reimagining of
this is a better, this is already a better version of Seven.
So they were like, this is a real bomb. And there were three notes found inside the box of the bomb. So there was more information. They were
life finds a way.
Nope. Not like, even close.
Believe in your dreams.
Yes. But it was backwards. They were like, you're in believe. We'll never figure this one out.
Burn it.
The first one was addressed to Captain R.J. Ritchie, Qantas general manager. And he said he wanted $500,000 in ransom in exchange for instructions how to defuse the bomb. Mm-hmm. It's an altitude bomb. So when it hits the altitude, it's like speed, but up. Yeah.
It's up. The movie up.
Up, but speed.
But speed on up.
Which is interesting because we kind of did an episode about the Balloon Fest.
Yeah.
And that was up. We're really.
Well, we are. You.
The Ghost Town universe
is. Get a locker. Put some pictures up. Start putting string.
Yeah. You can really.
You will crack this.
Yeah.
You are here to crack
you're
this.
You're in the Ghost Town universe.
Quit your job. Stop on your friends. Make this your life.
And if you have friends, how do you do it? How do you have any friends?
Is this where we talk about patreon.com/ghosttownpod?
Not yet.
Okay.
You got the name right, though.
Jumping at the bit. I finally got the name after over 100
episodes.
I'm
only on letter number one.
Whoa, damn. Okay, we got a lot. We got a journey. All right.
The second letter was addressed to Sergeant Short, the police. He says, a larger device. I mean, I don't know if he thought maybe like, I need enough people to get this information. Mm-hmm. Like,
If
one person... If it's only one and the person's out sick and it takes them a couple days to get it, it needs to be...
Someone's on vacation with their family, someone's wife got pregnant and like they're out.
So same information.
Sure.
The third one said that if the plane descended actually below 20,000 feet, the bomb would explode.
Okay, what is it?
So
is
what
it
goes up must come down.
Or is it descending?
It's going down. It's going, it's once it maybe triggers up.
Okay, triggers up.
And then triggers down.
And then, okay, so turned on. Yes. Explode.
Turn on.
You can't
on.
See my finger right now, but my if finger you could went up, stay my finger went down.
In infinitum up in the air.
Infinitum? Is that a word?
I don't know. Infinitum?
Infinitiveness?
No, infinitum. It sounds like it's a word.
Like in perpetuity?
Yeah.
It's not
illegal. It's illegal.
No.
The Office of the Prime Minister, the Premier, the Minister of Civil Aviation, they all got the information. The Army and Navy got together. They had submarines, helicopters, because we're going to go up, we got to go down, we have to cover all bases.
Sure.
Air and sea rescue, bomb dismantling.
Yeah.
Probably they were like, wow, we really have to assemble on this one.
We're going to crack force. And this is, and bomb stuff is no joke.
Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. This is not, but if you remember the title, you can just.
It's a jokes.
You can relax.
Joke hoax.
No, it's a real hoax. It's a hoax. It's a real hoax.
Well, okay. A joke hoax would just be real.
Yeah.
A real
I
bomb.
Guess so, yeah.
Damn.
So there was 116 passengers, 12 crew. They connected to the Captain William, nicknamed Bill.
Stop
Sewin,
it.
Sewin, yeah. And he was in control of the plane. He was told, he was skilled. He knew what he was doing. He said, continue north to Brisbane, Queensland, which way they were going and follow, just wait for instructions. But he realized that Sydney Airport was superior in capacity for, capabilities and emergencies. So he was kind of like changed to kind of go in that direction. So he's going back. Now he's going back to Sydney and maintain an altitude of 3,500 feet, 1,500 above.
Okay.
So the crew, started looking for this bomb.
Sure. They were like, but like probably in a casual like, oh,
yeah.
Just check
hey, do you want some nuts?
Can I look inside your bag, please?
Yeah.
Can I pat you down?
And everyone's smoking cigarettes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Cool.
I like My brother took me up in a plane, like a little Cessna plane, when he first got his license. It was one of the most terrifying and humbling things as an older sibling. Also, there was an ashtray, like an old school ashtray. Like
I remember that. I remember being on planes with ashtrays.
Oh, my God.
I remember it really well. Like, I remember, like, and then when they kind of, like, sealed them up when they were like, you can't do this anymore. But they still had them in there before they eventually changed the, yeah.
Amazing.
So he found a minimum speed because he had to save gas. They were scouring for bombs. Yeah.
And everyone's like, what the hell's going on here? All the Australians were like, we just want to get home. Everyone's like, we're checking your bags again. We're checking your cufflinks and pockets. Let me look inside your eyeballs. What's going on inside that pill case?
Mm-mm. Nope. Oof. Well, you know what? They didn't find anything, did they?
Nope.
But they did not know that at the time there was negotiations. Everyone has a nickname. Captain Robert James Burt Ritchie. It's like, did you give yourself your own nickname?
Yeah, you just take another normcore male name and put it in your name.
And General Manager Philip Housen, the extortionist, wanted to speak with Captain Ritchie, who was at his office at the time.
Housen, out of office, you know?
You don't know who's going to be there.
Look, everyone has a life.
And so Housen says, I'm the general manager. So they started negotiating. Qantas wrote a check for the $500,000.
Yeah, they're like, here, I don't know. God.
Yeah. They wrote the check and they were starting to bundle the $20 notes, I guess, whatever the, you know, it's not $20 bills, but whatever.
Yeah,
the
Australian currency.
Like the highest Australian currency. You know, the Reserve Bank. And they're counting the money through the afternoon. They only had time to record a minimal number of banknote prefixes, you know, to, you know, track the money when they get it. It was late in the afternoon. It's winter. Now, Mr. Brown set the ransom by this time. There was only 1 hour of fuel on the plane. So they were like, we can't do this forever, people.
Like, get on it.
So Mr. Brown spoke with Captain Housen.
And Dr. Brown Soda's like, no, man, come on.
it's not a Jewish jelly, right? Dr. Brown's a Jewish jelly, right?
Yeah, the celery soda, the cream soda.
I always pretended to like it. I don't know. Maybe I love soda, though. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I go to Jewish delis and that's what they had. Maybe root beer.
Yeah, for sure. Good. For sure.
Totally relevant to the story, though.
Yeah. Brown, doctor, mister, who's to say?
I am. It has nothing to do with it.
Oh, okay.
So they spoke at 2 p.m., 3 p.m., 4 p.m. as time was going on, more instructions. And he always had details that he was like, no, next you'll get more details. So he's just basically kind of just stalling.
Okay.
And then a call at 5:30 came from Mr. Brown with the final payoff instructions. The exchange lasted 9 minutes. He was told a yellow van would pull up outside the Qantas house in Chiefley Square at 5:45. Driver was to toot the horn 3 times and wave the car keys at the window.
Jingle jangle.
They were like, if anything goes wrong, boom. He's like, boom. Yeah. The getaway vehicle is not to be followed. You know, obviously, if you follow, you know the story. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yellow van. And then he was like, bright color.
It's not just me. There's a huge network here. It's other things can happen if you delineate. Is that the right word? Delineate from the plan?
Deviate?
Is it deviate? What's delineate?
Delineate is like a little like a subcategory.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. So not deviate. Yeah. Not delineate. And then, so there was, you know, police radio patrol. There's vehicles kind of like undercover out there. He made the Captain Ritchie made the rendezvous to deliver the ransom. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know if he knew what the, you know, chief executive looked like. So they weren't going to substitute a police officer in the place. They didn't want to take that chance. He's like, no. I know what you look like. Now you've deviated from the plan. Yeah, look at that.
Learning.
Nice.
Life is a process of learning.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And the getaway vehicle was not tailed. The van was discovered 15 minutes later, parked at the corner of George and Bathurst Streets, opposite the Regent Theater in the heart of the city. Mm. Want to take a little break and then get back?
I was just going to say that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Movies inspired by real crimes. Cruise ship deaths and disappearances, crimes that shape the course of history, and crimes involving families.
These are just a few of the series you can find on Corpus Delicti. Corpus Delicti is a weekly true crime podcast that takes a series approach, spending several weeks at a time discussing crime within a certain topic.
Hosted by two Southern Belles, we bring you compelling stories with a hint of Southern charm. Sometimes the stories will make you cry. Sometimes you might even laugh, but they're stories you won't want to miss.
Find Corpus Delicti on your favorite podcast app by searching for CORPUSDELICTI and join us every Tuesday. Hope to see you then.
All right. Now we're back from the break.
We're back.
Hello. Let me read some Instagram.
Yeah. What's happening on our Instagram, which is Ghost Town Pod.
Yeah. Huh? Nice.
Thank
nice.
You.
Forrest Whitaker Eyes, which is Brandon.
Mm-hmm. Wait, do you know this person?
I do now.
Oh.
Yeah. He made an Instagram story. He says, listen to Ghost Town Pod at Rebecca Lieb and at the Jason Horton, which mm-hmm. is our Instagram.
That's us.
They are fantastic. So super supportive.
Wow. Just like, I love it. Brief, but impacting.
Yeah. I like it. Super mm-hmm. important. Thank you for the support. If you Thank are you. Wondering, like, is rating and reviewing is on Apple Podcasts
you guys
helpful?
Don't need that.
It is.
Absolutely.
It absolutely we is super helpful.
We live for it. We live on it.
It helps us with you having to really do very mm-hmm. little. And if you've done it already, we appreciate mm-hmm. it. Thank absolutely. You so much. Please.
Please.
Please do it.
Please.
And if you want to do more, you can get a limited edition enamel pin.
Yes.
The first piece of Ghost Town merch.
Oh my God. These pins are beautiful.
They are.
Solid gold.
Better.
Diamonds.
Yes. Better than the show itself.
Yes. For only $6.66,
yeah.
you can make a deal with the devil, baby.
Yeah. And it's limited. We are probably going to break even on this particular thing.
That's an optimistic thought.
Yes. We're probably going to mm-hmm. lose money. Uh-huh. But we rather you have the pin, but you still get the bonus episodes. So you go to what's the site?
The Patreon is www.ghosttownpatreon.com. I got nervous.
You tried to show off the www.
I know, I really did. I really flew too close
to the sun.
You're
hot dogging the whole thing.
www.patreon.com/ghosttownpod. All right?
Yes.
We did it. I finally got it. It's been a year in the making. I haven't known. I am not an active, I don't have active knowledge of our social media or Patreon accounts for about a year. But here we are, you know?
You didn't know who Nicolas Cage was when I was trying to describe
true,
to you.
That's true. So, I am very with it.
Yeah,
I am not going slowly going crazy.
Okay. Are you down for more crime?
I am.
Okay, let's do some more crime. So a technician had noticed a mustard-colored van being driven.
Mustard or yellow? Which is it?
I would say brown. I'm going to say brown mustard. Hmm. Was driven erratically along George Street and, you know, caught his attention. He just jammed on the brakes. Uh-huh. A man emerged from the van carrying two blue suitcases and he walked around the corner to Bathurst Street and headed off on foot in the direction of Hyde Park.
Why?
Hyde Park in London.
Why? It's like
yeah.
the van, he leaves the van with the money on foot.
Yeah. Like in a panic. In so at 6:10 p.m.
suitcase.
Mr. Brown telephoned Qantas officials for a last time. Well, for a final One. Time. Public phone booth, by the way.
Of course, God.
And
it always is.
He was like, postscript? There's no bomb on the plane.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
He's like, you've been punked.
Yeah, pretty much. You've been X'd. Jamie Kennedy's X'd.
Oh, wow. Deep cut.
Yeah, deep cut. So people are obviously relieved. It's not like, hey.
Yeah, they're like,
oh, yeah. Come on, you lied to us. I was hoping there was going to be a bomb. I hope something was going to go wrong here. So people mm-hmm. were relieved.
Yeah. If this were a movie, it would be the fuel would be already on zero, like past zero.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, my God. And he's like, no bomb. And they'd be like, thank God. And then like a bunch of people make out on the plane.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So Mr. Brown gets away.
Mr. Brown. Temporarily.
Arch. So they're retracing his steps. They're trying to find out mm-hmm. where he went.
They're like, flag all mustard or yellow vans.
Yeah. Once he handed the two blue suitcases to Mr. Brown, Captain Ritchie took the elevator to his office. A couple minutes passed when a Detective McNeil walked in and announced they've got away.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Qantas general manager was like, how we had a plan.
Mm-hmm.
They had a plan to, you know, they had undercover, plain clothes.
Sure.
The police got stuck in the elevator.
Nice.
And it stopped at every floor. You know when you're in an elevator and just like, and like it stops at every single floor.
Yeah.
And it's, you have to go.
And
so that's
like, oh my God.
I mean, there's gotta be a way to bypass that.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's gotta be some button where it's like, get the bomb threat person.
So they did not have him. So there's conflicting stories of like what actually happened. No, we wouldn't have gotten him anyway based on other information. But, you know, this guy seemed to just be like, I got the monies and started running.
He's like, I'm on foot.
Yeah.
I'm running towards a public park.
He's probably better at the like the kind of technology version of it than the escape version of it.
I mean, some of this seems very sophisticated, the story. And other parts seems not at all.
So now they're like, we have to. He's like, he's gotten away.
Yeah, he's gone.
The money's got to be spent. Guilt has to be weighed. People involved.
The bills.
It's like loose lips sink ships. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we notice somebody going, hey, wow, you just bought a $75,000 car in 1971.
Don't they have the serial numbers? It's kind of like DB Cooper.
That's some.
Okay.
Some. They couldn't do it all in time.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. So they thought that Mr. Brown, they're kind of the CIB, Criminal Investigation Bureau, which is maybe the CIA or FBI. They thought that it was somebody who was involved, that understood aviation.
Mm-hmm. And which is bombs.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of makes sense.
Right.
I suppose, I mean, you'd have to figure out how to get, you'd have to understand nuances of you can't just be like, I'll just throw in seat F3. You know what I mean? You just can't.
No.
You just can't do it like that. They might have worked at the Sydney airport, that maybe knew some people. There was a story from the Daily Telegraph that they were going to, the detective sergeant Ken Brown was creating a life-size model of him based on the description. So they were making a composite of him to kind of like
life-size model.
Yeah. So just to really identify who it is.
Yeah. Every part of
him. They said, press, come in here, take a, it was like an art installation.
Come take a picture with Dr. Brown.
They said that he was around 25, 5'8".
Young, hot, single.
Brown hair, a bob cut.
A Prince Valiant style?
Yeah, sort of. Like that. Mustache, glasses. Now, who knows what's a wig and what's, blue floral patterned shirt, open at the neck, pretty deep. Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty deep.
I'd take a picture with this composite. I'd take this composite out for dinner and I'd pay.
Fawn colored wind cheater jacket, which maybe a windbreaker.
Fawn colored? Oh, yeah, that's I call that light brown peanut M&M.
This is very jaunty. Light colored trousers, flared bottoms, well-worn brown suede desert boots.
Everyone loves a flare jean on a man,
Yeah. Is it Jim Morrison? He died around the same time. The London newspaper, The Evening Standard, claimed the man was known to them, and they dispatched some fingerprints, and they were like, hey, we're going to have a lead on this person. On June 1st, police parked the mustard-colored van at the corner of the scene, so somebody might recognize it. Like, hey, do you remember seeing this here? So we'll put it there so you understand what's going on. They want to see if there's connected to any other criminals. They connected with the FBI, Scotland Yard, Interpol, academics at Sydney's University, listening to the voices.
Mm-hmm.
All the, some of the things that we were talking about in another episode where it's like all these little things.
The tools, the resources
to
identify.
And this is earlier
someone.
In time, but of course, it's when it's bomb threats and half a million.
Yeah, or even the phone tracking thing, where to find out where the phone booths were, or the registration on the van, or something, or maybe even the brand shirt. Can you go and find? That's what they did for Night Stalker. They found his shoe, but can we find any of those things?
Yeah. Well, what they did, they started doing some forensics on his voice. They said a mid England with the twang of North London. He said the man took possession of the ransom, spoken on an Australian accent, so detectives said that maybe it wasn't the actual Mr. Brown. The person who picked the thing up was not the person on the phone.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And the ingredients, I'll call them, of the bomb were only used at the Mount Isa Mines Limited in Queensland and Western Australian Mining Company.
Mm-hmm.
They went and investigated. They had a few suspects, people who maybe have access or a working knowledge of it. And then, finally.
Oh, baby.
The arrest
Gold
of
line.
Mr. Brown.
Ooh. Mr. Brown and me.
you can write letters to him now? You're already writing letters to him.
I'm already in love.
Yeah. He's 97 right now. So you were 95 is my limit. But.
Come on.
So two men were brought in on August 4th, 1971.
Mm-hmm.
A press conference. Chief of the CIB said that a 31-year-old fiberglass factory owner and driver from Devon, England, was Mr. Brown, and a 20-year-old Australian barman and former marine engineer was his accomplice. A detective acted on a tip-off from a service, the gas station attendant, about a guy that was spending a bunch of money.
Yeah, in a gas station. He was I want all the sodas and hard-boiled eggs and
pulled
cigarettes.
Pulled in with a brand new Jaguar.
So yeah, and he's like, I want 14 money orders and a Snickers.
Yeah, it's just dude, I don't
know. No, he's something's up.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll take the king size. He's like, yeah. No, I'll take the regular size. I'll buy two of them. I don't care. I got money to burn. That's my idea of luxury, though.
Yeah.
That's what. No, actually, here's what happened. He originally had a Jaguar, and then he came in with a new Ford GT.
Oh.
So I guess.
He's like, wait, nick's the Jaguar. He's like, go back, park away, get
no,
the
No,
other-
no, no. It's pulled in a new Jaguar. Oh, okay. They switch cars.
Okay.
Got it. That, now I'm understanding this. Because, yeah, there's just, he's like, oh, okay, a new car. They put a tail on him. Then he was arrested, living in a brand new penthouse. And yeah, all those things that you shouldn't. Don't do those things.
I guess if you're like 25 and you're like, you've never had this kind of money, you're like, yeah, I'll buy a high rise building. Yeah. I'll buy the nicest things. I'll get all the gold and silvers and platinums and diamonds, champagnes, women.
The second man, they arrested him. He was sitting in a late model red Ford GT inside of his home, and they impounded a Ford van located in probably another suburb, and it contained a bunch of tools that coincide with this, and they were arrested to appear in court the same day. They stood court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they charged that Peter Pasquale Macari was the person known as Mr. Brown.
He's like, let's take this name and let's whittle it down to something very normal.
Yeah, very cool name. He said he was the man who placed the bomb in the Sydney airport, made the telephone calls, and took the ransom and drove the van. Second man, Mr. Raymond James Poynting. Good names.
Ooh, yeah.
Assisted Macari in making the bomb, wrote through the letters, and then just kind of aided him in the operation.
Yeah.
Technical stuff. So
did he also have a penthouse, though?
What did he have? I think he had a couple of roommates.
Oh.
It was like a Three's Company situation.
Living in deep North Hollywood.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Not all the money's recovered. That's a big thing about this. The money is still.
Thing.
Yeah. And they said Mr. Macari was a flight risk. He was skipped on bail due to the serious nature. There was still $460,000 were still missing. Remained in custody.
That's a lot of money that's still missing.
On Sunday, August 8th, the Sydney Morning Herald ran a story. $138,240, the money is at the time. I was hidden in a fireplace in Mr. Brown's. Yeah.
In his fireplace.
Yeah. It was in a property that he purchased, was bricked up in a fireplace. And he had some time. I mean, there was a couple of months where they didn't have.
Yeah, it's weird, though. It's like, I want to hide this cookie. I'll put it in a mouth.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, they found it in plastic garbage bags. And there was stuff with the $20 notes. Mm-hmm. They couldn't find anything else anywhere there. The total came to $138,240. They can now account for half of the $500,000. Detectives alluded they were expecting a person, the petrol station attendant, to make a claim for the $50,000 reward. So that's accounting for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I guess, and Mr. Brown, right before he did that, a movie called The Doomsday Flight appeared on a Sydney television station. And a similar story of that concealed bomb criminal. And if it flew below that, it would detonate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
is that one, there was no bomb on the plane too?
No, I think that one was not. Yeah. And then the Washington, D.C. told hundreds of television stations, do not show this film. Mm-hmm. It was aired in Canada in 1971. I don't know if it actually ended up airing. Yeah. So it was a pretty giant bust.
Don't make a movie that coincides with a current crime. Because that could be sticky.
And they want, then it's like, where's the money? Where is the money?
Show me the money. That was later.
There's $239,000. He said there was a third person, and he was the mastermind.
Oh,
goes by the name of Ken. They're just getting lazy with the names here.
Gary.
It was Ken who asked him to make the bomb. Had watched Doomsday Flight and stayed in touch until the day of the extortion, and he took all of it except for $125,000. He threatened me and spoke of what they would do to him. So he was.
Wow.
Also under the gun. Yeah. The Brown said that after being paid the $500,000, he left the stolen van and he walked down Kent Street.
Mm-hmm.
He said that Ken and a second man were waiting in a white Valiant. Both parties drove to Olive Street, Paddington.
I think we were saying Olive Garden. I was like, hell yeah. That's how this ends.
Yeah. The suitcases were open. Ken took out the $125,000 and handed it to him. And then he put the lion's share of the ransom and drove away. Police are like, it's Macari that did it.
Yeah.
He said they gave $50,000 the ransom to Raymond Poynting and kept the rest.
Mm-hmm.
They think that the missing money's underwater off Bondi Beach in two corrosion-proof wall safes.
No, that's one of the theories. Yep. That's very close to my brother and kind of close to a teacher's bed.
I think your brother's
Does my brother have this money.
Is his name Ken? On January 27th, 1972, they were about to get sentenced. Kari got 15 years.
Okay.
Pled guilty. And Raymond James Poynting got 7 years.
All right.
Yeah. And crimetraveler.org, really good site. They have like really good, Nas, they have really good, like, they just have really good, like, information.
That's great.
And cool, a ton of good stuff. If you wanted to check pictures, check them out.
Okay.
I bet
there's some cool fashion photos of these men on this.
Gorgeous.
Site. I can't wait.
And the bombs are pretty terrifying.
I will swipe right on all of that.
From the brilliant creative minds that brought you Keep Drinking, It'll Get Better, and The Real Housewives of Hillcrest Nursing Home comes the podcast that people are raving about. Hi, this is Edward October for OctoberPodVHS.com, here to tell you what people are saying about our true crime podcast. A thread store in Arizona says, too much dribble and slang. These ladies obviously enjoy their own humor and sound high. Hey, at least they called you ladies. Benny from Idaho says, your topics are so appealing, but a three-person pod is difficult enough to follow without banter? Our true crime podcast only has two people? Wait. Where's the other 100 five-star reviews? Can somebody give me the five-star reviews? Okay, here we go. Much better. Luscious Lee says, stand up. 5 stars. You girls are funny AF. I especially love the Me and Mrs. Jones rendition you sneak into the recording. Cherry G 107 says, I struggle finding a new podcast, and so far, I've been hooked to you guys' podcast. Keep up the good work. Thumbs up, smiley face. Our true crime podcast, 2 girls, 1 story, and lots of bad renditions of songs you love. Available on your favorite podcatcher. Go binge it today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.